My place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself.
Hold hands and close your eyes. It's 12:30, and you're listening to the Ghost Story Guys.
Welcome to the Ghost Story Guys. I'm Brennan Storr.
I'm Ian Gibbs.
And this is the show where we talk about spooks, specters, and all the other things watching us from the shadows beyond the campfire. Some conversations only make sense after the sun has set, and this is most definitely one. Thanks for tuning in. This is episode number 87. And we're coming to you from that tiny mountain cabin you dream about, but can never quite reach. How you doing, Ian?
I'm doing great, Brennan. How are you?
I am good. I'm actually really looking forward to today's show. I always look forward to the shows. But I'm particularly looking forward to this one because it is an entire show devoted to listener stories from two listeners.
In one country, yes.
Both of whom grew up in the Philippines.
That's amazing.
It really is. And we've talked in past on this show about how we put together these shows from and stories from random sources. Luke will find online, or Anthony will find online, or in books. We rewrite them and we find that there are these common threads where we don't expect to see them.
Right. And from sometimes completely unrelated stories, unrelated experiences, and yet there's this similarity that runs through it.
Yeah. And this time around, there are some of those similarities in these two in the stories from these two completely unconnected people about their childhood growing up in the Philippines.
That's so pretty awesome.
It really is. So I'm looking forward to getting to those. But first, though, we have, I guess we have an announcement to make.
We do.
We're getting married. No, yeah. No, I'm kidding.
Will they, won't they?
That's right.
I can won't tell you right they. Now, won't they? Yeah.
They won't they?
They won't.
A thousand times over.
No.
I'm sure you're very disappointed.
Yeah. Where can I buy gas to set myself aflame? Disappointed.
I mean, gas is cheap right now, so that's a bonus.
That's true. Yay.
But yes. So no, the big announcement is, as I mentioned on the previous show, my audiobook, A Strange Little Place, is now available on Amazon and ACX and Audible and iTunes. And it's been selling really well.
It has. I'm so proud of you for doing that, finally completing it.
Thank you. I've sold more copies of the audiobook in the 2.5 weeks it's been up than I have the hard copy of the book in the last year.
And that's not depressing.
No. It's fine.
It's great.
I just got this thing in my eye. No, anyways.
It flew in there with its big F for failure.
You've seen my tattoo, then.
There you go.
But yeah, so it's selling really well. And as of 2 days ago, we started production on Ian's audiobook, which I will be reading because Ian has... Well, he's a busy man. He has more people living in his house than I have in mine.
That's a huge part of the problem, and a very loud cat. Like, yes. When I was thinking about trying to do it myself, because, you know, it's always good when the author does their own stuff.
Sure.
But I'm like, there's no way. Like, I would have to kill Randy, and that doesn't seem right.
I love how that's where you go. Not leave him downstairs, put him in a room down somewhere.
Oh, no, you'd still hear him. You'd still hear him. I could lock him in the trunk of my car, and you could still hear him.
That's a good point. No, of course.
No.
I came to your house to have you sign some books for the store about a week and a half ago. He was inside, and I could hear him outside.
Yep.
So, yeah, okay, fair enough.
I'm not even exaggerating.
No, you're right. But, yeah, so Ian's book will be available probably in about... I'd say about 6 to 8 weeks. The approval process takes a really long time.
Yeah.
But the big announcement for what's coming after that is that, well, Ian had a brainwave.
Once your book was now selling like hotcakes, and then my book, you'd sent me the first two chapters, and I listened to them this morning, and that's when the lightning bolt struck, and I thought, wait a minute, I can't be the only ghost book author who would love to see an audio copy of their book floating around, but doesn't have the time or, let's be honest, expertise to do it. And why don't we start something? Why don't we have our own kind of audiobook publishing company? Because, hey, we've got all the equipment. We've got Brennan's golden voice. No, stop it. Just stop it. I never should have said it. I hate encouraging you. and so I had a little chat with a very good friend of mine, and she was super in.
And that friend is, of course, Canadian ghost story titan Barbara Smith.
Mm-hmm.
And Barbara has a back catalog of 30 plus books going back, I think, 30 plus years.
Yeah, it's a ways.
And so over the coming months, we will be bringing some of those titles, some of which have been out of print for quite a long time,
mm-hmm.
to the audiobook market. So you will have books like The Ghosts of Hollywood, Ghosts of the Rockies, mm-hmm. and so much more. And so we're really, really excited to be doing this. I think it's going to be a massive amount of work, but I very much think it's going to be worth it.
Oh, it's going to be a massive amount of work. But I think it's going to be awesome, and I'm really excited we can do it.
Me too. So keep an eye out for that. We'll update you as the shows, you know, as we get further into the summer, we'll update you on how that's going and where you can go to get those books. But for now, if you want to pick up a copy of my audiobook, A Strange Little Place, available
on Amazon.
On Amazon. Amazon ACX Audible. Would love for you to do that. You can use your Audible credits. I know I've had some people ask me whether I still get paid if they use their Audible credits, and I absolutely do.
Excellent. So
feel free to use those. And yeah, keep an eye out for Victoria's Most Haunted coming soon, and the back catalog, or at least selected titles from the back catalog of Barbara Smith in the months after that. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back with our listener stories from the Philippines. Back. As we said before the break, on this episode, we're telling listener stories from the Philippines, specifically two listeners who have had, from the sound of it, very haunted upbringings, particularly mm-hmm. the latter of the two. From our listener, Bob, there is a real ton of stuff there.
Yeah.
But before we get to it, I wanted to tell you about something that happened at work the other day.
Yeah, you mentioned something weird had happened, but you didn't get into details. What went on?
So there was one thing that happened about a week and a half ago, and I think I talked about it on a previous recording, but then I cut it for time.
Okay.
And so I went into this apartment building in downtown Victoria. I've never been to it before.
Right.
One upside to this job is, you know how I'm a nosy bastard.
Yes, you are.
Well, I get to go into all these buildings to which I would otherwise not have access.
Right.
So I get to, you know, see a lot of different apartment buildings, see how things are laid out. I'm just a big nerd for that kind of stuff. So it's been really fascinating, but the downside is sometimes you wander into a building that doesn't feel great.
You wander into a building that doesn't want you there.
Exactly. Yeah. And so this first building about a week and a half ago, very much one of those places. I got off the elevator on the floor. I should have gone right. I went left.
Mm-hmm.
The way the hallway was laid out, left seemed like the more obvious choice.
Right.
But there was a point in that hallway that should not have been as dark as it was.
Oh, no.
And I felt it before I saw it. I got off the elevator and I thought, something feels wrong. Come around the corner. Oh, there it is.
Wow. So it was that strong.
Yes. And wow. There was a cat wailing right at the door, right next to where that light was off.
Oh, perfect.
And I should say, yeah, that's always a good sign. I guess I should say the light wasn't off. It just looked like the light was off. The bulb was on, but the shadow was massive.
Wow. That's crazy.
And so I walked through it, which wasn't great.
No.
Because I was looking for the apartment. That's when I realized I must have been on the wrong side of the floor, went over, delivered my thing, got out. But when I got home, I smudged the hell out of myself.
Really? It was that
I
bad,
felt
eh?
Sticky.
Oh, no. You felt like something was like stuck to you.
Yeah. Nothing conscious, not like a haunting, but like residue. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, like fallout in a way. So
I feel bad for the poor people who live there and have no idea.
I can't imagine that poor cat. That was it for about a week and a bit. You know, I go to a lot of apartment buildings. I've done, you know, several hundred of these deliveries now. But then about 3 or 4 days ago, I had the first experience in my, really in, actually in my life, where I've been genuinely afraid of a place.
Seriously?
Yep. Genuinely afraid. It was an apartment building. I won't say where on air, but I'll tell you. So I've just described the location to Ian off air.
Yeah.
And he said he did not, he was not aware there was an apartment building in this location because it's an industrial area.
Oh, and it's an icky feeling area too.
Yes.
Spiritually. Yes.
And this is, sounds a little bit gross, but on shift at any given time, because the idea is, you know, you drive around from restaurant to house to restaurant to house.
Yeah.
I usually have to pee. It's just a, it's
of course.
A
yeah. Me too.
You know,
me too.
And so you just hold it until you get to a, either a friendly restaurant or, you know, a nearby public washroom.
Yeah.
And so I pulled up to this apartment building and I looked at it. My first thought was, oh no. And I started walking up the drive and the feeling got worse. And it was just this general unease.
Wow.
Then I rang the bell and the intercom, instead of saying anything vocal to me, it just started like screeching white noise.
Okay. That's not good.
No.
No.
So the, I go inside, I go into the hallway. And immediately my fear ratchets up from unease, say 4 to 9.
Holy cow.
And I can't explain where it's coming from. I went for a walk the other night into Beacon Hill Park, just a little ways.
Yeah.
I was doing this random walk thing where it gives you a randomly generated point and you just go there.
Yeah, I wouldn't go into Beacon Hill Park at night.
Well, no, because the point was in a clearing off in the dark. And I started to walk towards it and I thought, no, this is stupid.
Yeah.
So I stopped, but I still wasn't as nervous about going into that clearing right. as I was going into this building.
Holy cow.
And so I get into the elevator, go up to the third floor, and it just gets worse.
Oh,
and
no. Now,
yeah. And thankfully, it was the door I had to deliver to was very close to the elevator.
Yeah.
I dropped it, and I was out of there so fast. But what was crazy is, again, I'd had to use the can for a while. Yeah. I walked into that building, and immediately – I genuinely thought I was going to piss myself.
Wow, because of the fear.
I guess. That's all I can figure. Because I walked out of there and I thought, okay, I'm going to have to go find some bushes or something, which is not super optimal when you've got your delivery bag and someone sees you.
No. Yeah, they frown on that.
Yeah. But no, eventually, once I stepped outside and got back to the car, it started to fade.
Wow.
And then it just went back to baseline normal. I'll deal with it when I get a chance. From the outside, it's a totally nondescript building.
That's bizarre.
But
I wonder what's going on in there. I wonder what's happening.
I honestly don't know. It didn't necessarily feel like paranormal entity. You know, like
right.
sometimes the assumption would be, oh, there's a demon or there's something really bad in there.
Yeah,
but it was more like there is something happening in here.
Right.
That you don't want to be near or part of.
Yeah, I can. Yeah, I get that.
So that's my big creepy work story.
Well, I'm glad you didn't piss yourself.
Yeah, that's right. The story of how Bren didn't piss himself this time.
And that's how I will choose to remember that story.
Oh, good. I'm glad I can bring my customary dignity to this in every episode.
Your class and dignity prevails once more.
And now it's time for the stories.
Our first story comes from Rose. A bit of background. I was born in the Philippines. Both my parents are also from the Philippines. My dad is the one that doesn't believe in anything supernatural, even though he has had experiences. My mom has a third eye and sees people before they die, or sees people that have already died. She chose to shut off this gift because she considers this a curse. As a child, we always heard stories about supernatural things that could not be explained. I think it was mostly so we stayed close to home. I've never seen anything supernatural, but I do believe it. My dad told me a story about the Capre. He said that when he was little, he saw one at night with my grandfather. They lived in Cebu in the Philippines. My grandfather harvested sugarcane along with my dad and put them in front of the house to be picked up in the morning. But in the morning, the guy that was supposed to pick it up asked where the sugarcane was. My grandfather said he'd left it in front of their house. The guy got mad and accused my grandfather of lying. So they harvested sugarcane again and left it in front of the house. My grandfather said to my dad, "We will stay up tonight and see who has been stealing the sugarcane and we will catch them in the act." My father said, "Okay," and they waited. The night came And to their surprise, they saw this giant take the sugar cane and start eating it. Apparently, he looked really big, smoked a cigar, and had really long hair. My dad was shocked. He said he walked back to his tree, a Baletti tree, and never came back. Baletti trees are supposed to be a place of residence for these creatures. I've come close to it once when I was little and did not like the feeling I got from there. It definitely felt as if I was not supposed to be there.
So as we mentioned, there's going to be two sets of stories tonight. So when you hear stories from Rose, there's going to be a long string of stories from Rose. And we're just going to jump in at breaks in story and comment on what's come before. And then the second set of stories will be from Bob, and we'll do the same thing. And I'm just looking at this story from Rose about the Baletti tree. And now the people of the Philippines, Rose, we're sorry about the pronunciation. We're going to do our best.
I want to apologize to the entire nation of the Philippines right now, because I will butcher your words, and I am sorry already.
We did look it up, and we have tried to, you know, sort of find pronunciations as much as possible. But yes, there is a very strong chance that we're going to screw it up probably pretty bad.
Yeah.
So fair warning. What I find fascinating about this particular story is just that I guess they have giant bikers in the Philippines.
That's what it sounds like, doesn't it?
He's enormous. He's got long hair. He smokes a cigar. That's either a professional wrestler or a biker, or a combination of the two. When I was around 9 years old, I heard my dad scream from his bedroom. I ran upstairs to check on him, and he said, "I can't get up. I can't move my legs." I asked him if he'd stepped on, and I'm sorry, Rose, I'm not even going to try and read this because, again, I will defame your beautiful language, but it means old man of the mound. What it looks like is a small hill with no grass in areas that didn't make sense why it's there. We were told when we were little to never step on them because spirits live there. I never once tried to see if that was true because bad things can happen. So the answer to my question was yes, he did step on that mound. I freaked and got my mom right away. Before we got upstairs, he screamed again. This time he had tiny cuts all over his legs. My dad would never make up something like this. My mom said that she was going to consult with this lady that we call Mangihilot, which means a person who massages you, or shaman. I've had this a couple times where she would massage you with her special oil, and she would remove the bad spirits from you. My mom came home and said that this lady gave her a ritual where she had to use a candle and drip it in a basin to make sure who or what we were dealing with, and then go from there. The solution? My mom had to go to our backyard for 1 week at midnight to apologize to this spirit so it would heal my dad. I thought that was scary as fuck, because backyards in the Philippines is not like here in Canada. Over there, backyard means dark, scary, full of creepy crawly bugs that can put you in the hospital. Our backyard just felt off when we were kids. As much as we wanted to play there, there was always something that felt like you were not supposed to. Back to my mom. She did as the Mangihilot said, and the cuts disappeared and he was able to walk after a week. After this whole thing happened, my dad didn't want us to talk about it. He wanted us to just pretend like it never happened.
In Myanmar, they call those nature spirits nuts, like G-N-U-T.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and they believe in them very powerfully. That as much as the country is devoted to Buddhism, the nut gods are still a big part of country life.
Oh, fascinating.
Yeah, so that's interesting to read that about the Philippines.
Well, and I mean, nut is not a million miles removed from the name that that Rose gave us, which I declined to pronounce because I'm going to mangle it.
No, you're right. And so that's interesting. That's really interesting.
Yeah, no kidding. And the backyard thing gets me too, because again, you and I have talked at length about how awful the woods are and how you should never be near them.
It's true.
And it sounds like here the woods are just your backyard.
Yep.
And that's bad every way something can be bad.
Every night, me and my siblings would take turns to clean up after dinner. This time, it was me and my older sister. I was in charge of washing the dishes, and she was in charge of collecting all the leftovers and giving it to the cats living between us and our neighbor. In this area where we fed the cats, there wasn't much light. The light that you can see was right outside our door from the side of the house. We always rushed to feed the cats because it was dark, and we felt scared all the time. We never, ever looked around us. We just fed them and came back in. And between us and our neighbor was an empty, massive area for cars, because the people who owned our house and our neighbor's house were siblings, and they didn't want to build a fence, and they kept everything open. As I washed the dishes, all I saw was my sister run so fast she didn't even close the door. I asked what happened, but she never came back down, and so I didn't think much of it. The next day, she told me that when she had finished feeding the cats, she got curious and looked down in this barrel of water in our backyard, which was a little lower down from where she was standing. In the barrel, she saw her, a faceless woman who was all white. In the Philippines, we call this the White Lady. There are women who are lost and don't know where to go, so they just keep hanging around. We're told that if we ever see one, to never look at its face. My sister said she will never forget that experience and what a mistake it was. In this area where we lived, we asked our neighbors if they've ever had encounters with the supernatural, and they said yes. Their niece said that when she was little, she went into our basement a few times and then never again because the door locked behind her. She also said that something pushed her from behind as she went up the stairs.
Something that really jumps out at me in all these stories, and it jumps out at me even more towards the end of the stories we'll be sharing tonight, is how much more immediate these stories seem to be to the people experiencing them. You know what I mean?
Yes, I totally know what you mean. And I think that's because on the whole, it's just a part of the fabric of life. It's not like if I said to you, hey, Brennan, I got up this morning and there was an entire flock of ravens in my tree. You'd be like, oh yeah, that's crazy.
If I even read the message at all.
Well, true. Or responded in any way.
Yeah. But left on read.
It would be different, but it wouldn't be, wow, that's crazy. Yeah. And I think in a way, it's kind of the same thing. It's like, these things happen. We know they happen. Yes, it's weird or we're uncomfortable by it or whatever, but it's still happening. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does. I guess what I'm thinking is, you know, it's sort of a given here that, oh, this is the White Lady. And yeah, if we see her, just don't look in her face. Move on. You know,
right. Whereas, and everyone knows it.
Yeah. Whereas in Revelstoke, there is a spirit said to walk down part of what is called Victoria Road at a certain time of night, every night. Wow. And I've only heard this from really one person, but this person is a pretty solid person. I have to be very, very vague.
Yeah.
But, you know, they are someone who I trust. I trust what they're saying. But, you know, you can't say to someone, oh, yeah, no, this is that's just Invisible Sally. She walks down the street about this time, you know, because if you say that over here, people are looking at you like it's time to take you to the booby hatch.
Exactly. Yeah.
And there it's kind of like along the same lines of, you know, don't talk to strangers on the bus.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, oh, OK.
It's such a fascinating idea that a culture would regard these things that way, because I think to people like you and I and a lot of the people we've met through the show, that way of thinking is much more in tune with how we live.
Yes, exactly. But we are the weird ones.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And I mean, honestly, I think I was having this discussion this week with a group. And I said, really, what it all comes down to is energy.
Right.
It comes down to energy. And that's it. Good energy, bad energy. That's it. And the living and the dead both have their own energy. And yeah, you just sort of go with it. But if you're not willing to acknowledge that that's even a thing, I think you're cutting out about 25% of your input in the world.
I think a large portion of it, yeah. And I think if you're not allowing yourself at least even room for uncertainty.
Yeah.
To say, well, okay, I just saw Invisible Sally walking down the road.
Right.
I don't know what the hell that is.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know what? I don't have to explain it. I just saw Invisible Sally, and that's a thing I see, and okay. You know, I mean, if I start having like aphasia or something, maybe I should see a doctor because, you know, I have problems with my brain. But, yes. You know, otherwise, yeah, I just sometimes see Invisible Sally in that particular place. But I feel like we struggle to build that into our worldview, even the room.
I agree. You
know, we have to have everything so tightly locked down with explanations.
Yes, I agree. And I think that's mostly from our kind of Western world and our Western need to explain everything with science.
Which I think is kind of a mastery, you know, it allows you to put yourself above these things.
It does. And then,
it's only my brain.
Yeah. You don't have to deal with them then.
This happened in Bulacan. My mom has a third eye and was invited by my grandma's friend to join a group where you enhance your gift. But my mom refused as she didn't see the benefit in that. When my mom was a small girl, her aunt died. In the Philippines, when someone passes away, they are kept in their home and preserved for 7 days, usually in an open casket. Quite frankly, it is scary. While viewing the body with her family, my mother went outside with the other children as they had gotten bored inside, and it was already dark. Outside, my mom saw her aunt and started screaming, "Nanang Poleng! Nanang Poleng!" All the other children screamed and went upstairs. My mom thought it was weird that the other children screamed, but nevertheless, she went up to her aunt and tried to talk to her, but she never answered. Her aunt just looked at her. Then my mom got called upstairs and asked why she was screaming Nanang Polang. My mom said, "I saw her. She was there. I talked to her, but she didn't answer." Her family showed her her aunt's body in the casket and said, "Look, she is here. How can she be there when she's right here?" From that time on, my mom knew she was not like everyone else, which she considered to be a curse. She told me herself that she shut it off because she started seeing people in her dreams and knowing how they will die days before they die. She asked me, "How can I think it's a gift when I see someone I know will die before even they know it?" I've met my grandma's friend who invited my mom to join this group of enhancing gifts. She's a nice lady, but if you cross her, she can do bad things to you. My mom told me that one time she put boils on my aunt's husband's face because he talked badly about her. My aunt apologized to her and made the boils go away. So that is the end of the stories from Rose. And thank you so much, Rose, for sharing those with us. That is incredible. We've been sitting on those since April. And I
love the cultural insight into these.
Oh, absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like, I can't get enough of stories from other places because we all have these shared experiences. And yet we have different experiences depending on where we are. I love it. I just love it.
Funny enough, this show came about because I had planned or was working on something else. I was working on a show about Vietnam.
Oh, okay.
Stories from Vietnam. But what I was finding was that all the stories we were turning up were mostly from tourists.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, so they were people, the white perspective on...
Yeah, on Vietnam. Yeah, and they all kind of started, "Well, I was in my hotel room at X." And hotel stories are great. We've done whole episodes of hotel stories.
Yeah.
But I wanted something that was a little more out in the world. So we've shelved that show for the time being, but I want to take this opportunity to put that out there to our listeners. If you are from Vietnam or if you are of Vietnamese ancestry and you have any stories that you'd like to share with us, we'd love to hear them and we'd love to incorporate them in a future show. I know we have some listeners of Vietnamese ancestry. We've heard from some of them in past. I don't know that we have many listeners in Vietnam, but if we do, you know, again, if you have a story to share, we'd love to hear it. GhostStoryGuys@gmail.com to help us round out that show on stories from Vietnam. Because again, it's the script sitting there and it's fine, but it needs a little something to make it sing.
Well, and that doesn't preclude, you know, if you're from a country that you really don't hear very often, you know, much about, we would love to hear from you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we'd love to hear from everybody. We're very lonely.
We are very lonely.
but yeah. So again, ghoststoryguys@gmail.com and just tell us your tale from your country of origin, country of choice, whatever you like. We'd love to hear it. But thank you again, Rose. Thank you so much for sharing with us. We really, really appreciate it. And we hope that you enjoyed the way we told your stories.
Our next set of stories come from Bob. "I finally got the nerve to write these stories down. Though mild compared to some of the stories I've heard on your show, these tend to literally haunt me. Disclaimer, my stories are mostly short and more of the fragment type. My grandparents' house is a quarter-acre mansion, with its own full-size basketball court, U-shaped driveway with two gates, a volleyball court, a grotto, massive 300-plus-year-old trees, a detached garage the size of most modern bungalows, a generator room, two kitchens, a library and atrium, and a water tower. Your everyday Resident Evil-style mansion. That's half. The property is bisected by a national highway. The other side has a rice mill, the warehouse, the trucking depot, the pig pens, cow enclosures, and chicken coops. And every inch is haunted. The imposters. This happened over and over throughout our years of living in our grandparents' home and later our own home. The first occurrence, according to both my grandma and my mom, is when they were downstairs in the recreation room. They were sitting across each other sewing, when clear as day, they both heard my grandma call my mom from upstairs. Just as my mom was about to answer reflexively, my grandma locked eyes with her, and then in my mom's voice, it answered mockingly, also from upstairs, calling my grandma."
Now, I was on board for a moment there, because I thought, well, you know, okay, so maybe we're just hearing the echoes, or it's a benign spirit.
Yeah.
But then it's the mocking voice.
Yes.
Not I don't cool. like.
No. No. Not okay at all.
We've talked before about how terrifying this whole doppelganger idea is.
Well, and voices imitating us.
Yes.
Right? That's not okay.
And I know I've mentioned this on the show before, but it just, I love telling the story because it's so ridiculous and yet was such an important thing for me. Mm-hmm. And that was the night that Nikki called me from the bedroom because I think she had a headache. She asked if I could bring her some.
Baby, I need you. Get in here.
Well, now I know it's a demon.
That's funny.
But I think she was calling, asked if I bring her some migraine medication. And so I got up, walked down the hallway to the bedroom, and I said, yeah. She said, come in here for a sec. And I literally had to turn on the light because there was no way in hell I was walking into a dark room just on the basis of some voice calling me and telling me to. I have been doing this show for too long, watching too many horror movies, for me to just go, oh, sure, disembodied voice. I'll step into the dark. Let me close the door behind me. So I actually had to, I said, close your eyes for a second, flicked on the light. She went, what are you doing? Turned the light back off. Okay, it's you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then I had to explain to her that her husband is insane.
Well, I'm sure she wasn't shocked.
Well, okay, more insane than perhaps she had anticipated. but that ain't great, Bob. And for this to be where it starts is not encouraging.
Mm-mm.
My own experience. This happened during my freshman year of high school. Since I was attending a Catholic school 4 towns away, I got home later than everybody else, so I would typically miss family dinner. Most country folks turn in early around 6 p.m., sundown, their houses bolted and shuttered. On one such night, as I was changing for my uniform, I heard my mom call me. Bobby, she said, go eat dinner before it gets cold. So I marched myself downstairs to the prep kitchen, and as I was eating, my mom called me from upstairs. She said, have you eaten dinner yet? Blood drained from my face. I took the switch back stairs 2 to 3 steps at a time, food still in my mouth until I reached her, gasping. I explained what had happened, and she told me the reason why she got up is to make sure I had company, and that was the start of the talks with parents and grandparents. Not about the birds and the bees, but the apparently thin veil in our home. That was also the start of the buddy system, where my mom made sure we never went anywhere by ourselves, in our own home no less. This included bathroom trips, with one inside, one outside, both occasionally sounding off. It became the norm in our childhood, even during daylight hours. I repeat, burn it all
down.
There
you go. I told you it was going to get worse.
Oh my God, that is, I just can't imagine. And again, I respect the fact that they just kept going forward.
Yeah.
You know, when I was writing my book, A Strange Little Place.
Oh God.
Available everywhere. Fine books are sold. No big deal. Wrote a book. It's fine. Sure, it was 4 years ago. No, I haven't written anything else since. Fuck you.
It was my goal to be a functional alcoholic.
That's right. I wanted this. Living my dreams. But I remember there was this one couple I couldn't interview because they've long passed, but I interviewed their nephew, I think it was. And he said they were good, you know, kind of quote unquote normal working class people. Mm-hmm. And yeah, their house was haunted and they just learned to live with it.
Yeah.
You know, would happen and they would just go, okay, well, I guess we're redoing the laundry.
Yep. Although I have to say, you are not a very good paranormal author if the fact that these people died is stopping you from interviewing them. I'm a little disappointed in you there, buddy.
That's right. My next book, I'm going to be interviewing everyone with a Ouija board.
My brother's experience. One summer afternoon, just before twilight, there was a power outage. At the time, my two brothers were just hanging out in our room when they heard my dad call them from down by the basketball court where gate number 3 is located. Being smart, they both went downstairs and out into the basketball court where there was nobody. My dad didn't get home for another 30 minutes. Right there and then, they both knew the buddy rule worked. Our home. Our home is in the mountain province in Baguio City, City of Pines, away from the tropical heat of the flatlands. It's built on the outskirts of town, in a small, quiet subdivision, our backyard sloping down into a fern gully. The lots surrounding our house are empty, with our home having been built beside the mountain slope. This experience started happening when our fourth and youngest brother was born, on the last days of summer vacation. We were up by the road, which is level with our roof, saying our goodbyes and sending our grandparents off back to the lowlands, when all of us heard a crying baby. Instinctively, my mom turns to go get the baby from the crib, only to bump into me, the oldest, holding my baby brother in my arms. We made eye contact, The adults all fell into a hush and then quickly rushed us back to the living room to have a quick meeting. My grandparents ended up staying another 2 nights to make sure we were okay. Over the years, the voices, crying baby, and specters has become a feature among our various relations during their visits. With the last of the crying baby happening during my senior year in high school when my baby sister was 5. As for the voices, it still does that in the old house to this day, even though nobody's lived there in years. The most recent was when my siblings attempted to master their fear by group touring the old house during Christmas break 2019 and introducing their significant others to the very subject of many of our childhood stories, only to be greeted by familiar voices long dead, my grandmother and her sister. Nobody spent the night there, not even in the detached guest houses in the back. Note, my dad would not set foot in the old house without my mom handily close by, and the caretaker will not set foot in the property when the sun goes down.
And no one blames any of them.
No, for doing those things. No, I'm sure nobody is upset about this at all. They're all like, yep, sounds smart to me.
I got to say, you know, the whole we're going to go back now that we're grown up and show our loved ones this.
Sounds like an amazing movie.
Well, I was going to say, no, it sounds like the start to a horror movie. Yeah, that's what it sounds like. Yeah. And no scenario that sounds like the beginning to a horror movie is something that you should walk into as a real life person in this world.
I agree with that. Yeah.
Because like when I was out for that walk that night, that random walk, and they wanted to take me into the clearing in the dark. Oh, yeah. I'm sure it would have been interesting. Absolutely. Yeah. The 90 minute long chase film where a knife hobo is following me through the dark. I'm sure it would have been thrilling.
You should just try it and see what happens.
And you try and upload the podcast without me.
Oh. Damn it. Okay, never mind.
I was going to say, you should have a vested interest of anybody in keeping me alive here.
Oh, yeah. I'm the one who's going to have to post the sad message on the website about your tragic and untimely death. So you're right. I really should have more of a vested interest in this.
I love how that's the part you struggle with.
Yeah, it would take me almost 15 minutes to do that.
The ghosts of World War II. The National Highway sits in the middle of our properties. Back during World War II, this hilltop had a grove of ancient mango trees, providing shade and shelter to passing Japanese troops, and untold misery and suffering to the surrounding countryfolk. On hot summer nights, we have taken to spending our nights in the straw huts on the business side of the property, catching the breeze and predating podcasts, listening to the radio with the farm workers well into the night. On one such night, after the last of the hardy workers had trudged their way home, only my immediate family was left. My siblings were sleeping fitfully, my parents and grandparents chatting in hushed tones about the livestock, and me staring off into the starry skies trying to keep up with the radio, which had been set to a low murmur. Then my dad hushed everybody. From the highway came a distinct, metallic clinking and the soft hiss of chains dragging. I couldn't quite make out whether it was on this highway's asphalt or our rice mill's concrete apron. Either way, the slow, agonizing procession made its way down the road, prompting my dad and grandpa to investigate if anybody was trying to steal trucking chains off the depot, only to come back shakily declaring they can hear it, but not see it. The White Lady. This is probably the one event that shook the family the most. It happened the year I was born, 1977. On a relatively quiet night, my grandpa was sitting on the toilet when a white lady came gliding in from the window directly above his head. Startled, he slipped and broke his shoulder. Worried about his then-only grandkid, he managed to stagger to the intercom to wake my mom. My mom got up to see what the commotion is about, only to be greeted by the same white lady with no face going through her wall from the corridor and standing just behind the TV stand. Mom mustered up enough courage to snatch me from the crib and yell at my father to wake the fuck up. The white lady backed up into the wall and out into the corridor, fading away in front of grandmother, who barely made it there. They had to bring my grandpa to a major surgical hospital through rough country roads with everybody in tow. And that is a story that really caught me as a connection to Rose's stories.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of stories over here of, you know, sort of white ladies. It's almost a ghost cliche at this point over here.
I mean, we heard about the white lady in India too, right?
Oh, of course. Yeah. It wasn't just the white lady over there. There was women and men, but they were, very, very pale, very blindingly white.
Yeah. I don't know. It's interesting.
It is. It makes me wonder, you know, because I think over here we tend to, people who are in, you know, sort of the community of people who think there is something more to these stories, you know, than just your brain going kooky.
Yeah.
They always attribute, say, things like the White Lady to a death in the area.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, you know, when you've got all these different people seeing these things and it becomes, again, part of the culture, you almost have to ask yourself, is that what's happening? Or is this the answer much more complex? And just before we go on to the next section, I got to say, Bob, your family sounds great. This whole setup sounds very idyllic and pastoral. I understand it comes about through a great deal of hard work.
Mm.
The downtime sure sounds nice.
The voice. Preamble. The first time I consciously remember hearing it is way back in preschool. You know that saying they drill into your little head, the one along the lines of do not talk to or go with strangers? Well, I didn't realize how close I've come to death, if not for a very forced whisper type of voice that kept me from harm. I don't know what it is. Perhaps I'll never know. The first time, it was the end of the last day of kindergarten, just before summer vacation, when all of us were anxious to get home and start loafing around the house. We crowded around the school gate with guardians, parents, and service drivers all waiting on the other side. This is the age when there was no cell phones, Wi-Fi, or even a computer in school, so it was really left up to the child to recognize who's taking them home. When my turn came, a person approached me on the other side of the gate and said, "Hey kid, your mom asked me to pick you up." I then repeated what my mom told me to ask in the highly unlikely event she's unable to come get me and sends one of her employees. "What's my mom's name?" The stranger effortlessly replied with her name, and I was just about to tell the guard to let me through, when a long, drawn-out voice with a whisper quality to it said, "Don't go. He's not the one picking you up." It sounded like someone speaking loudly in the back of my ears. Puzzled that I felt the vibrations as much as I'd heard them, I turned away from the gate and looked for whoever startled me. By the time I wandered back to the gate, I saw my mom on the other side. The story would have ended there but for one detail, which we found out after summer vacation was over. And I was looking for my friend Alan. Kids are simple. We became friends after we found out we had near identical lunchboxes. Apparently, Alan went with that stranger, who used the same ploy. His parents received a ransom note. They complied, but poor Alan, having seen the stranger's face, was tied in a sack and dumped in a rice irrigation ditch. The later details I finally put together after running into one of our former schoolmates during my freshman year in a high school several towns away. The second time I heard the same voice was around third grade. As school kids go, we were sitting around, bullshitting with each other. Me, in a moment of stupidity, blurted out that my parents kept a million peso in cash in their dresser at all times. At that time, 15 bucks is 1 peso. That's roughly $66,000. One night I woke up, feeling the need to relieve myself. No need for the buddy system, as I was sleeping in my grandparents' master bedroom with the bathroom just past the adjoining dressing room. So I got up, but right before I go to the dressing room door, I noticed the super bright fluorescent lights were on. I stood there for a second, trying to get my eyes to adjust, when the voice said, "Go back to bed. Don't get up. Hurry." I complied. I don't know, perhaps the urgency of the speaker made me do it. I woke up in the morning to a household completely abuzz with activity, the police all over our estate. I overheard my grandfather telling an investigator that there was a break-in while everyone was sleeping and that thankfully nobody was murdered in their sleep. All told, he lost a microscope, some cash, and some jewelry. It took me a while to remember that the voice told me to go back to bed, which probably saved us all. Had I walked into that room, the suspects might have panicked and killed us. Bank-grade bars got installed, door and window alarms, as well as a lock-in policy in our respective rooms, no matter what we hear outside, went into effect. That was the last time I've heard the voice.
Now, I obviously, there's a lot of very, very serious stuff in there. The stuff about Alan is terrible.
Oh, it's so sad.
And it's grotesque that people get up to this shit, but it seems to be a fact of the natural world. But on a lighter note, I do love that the thieves took a microscope.
Science loving thieves.
Yeah, I have to assume they were robbed maybe by the Riddler.
Look, gold, jewelry, cash, and I can finally see a mitochondria.
I hear it's the powerhouse of the cell.
Yes, that's right. Will we see a paramecium? Oh, I hope.
They traipse through the fields going back to their, I assume, volcano hideout.
It's interesting, though, about the lock-in policy, because I had a friend who stayed in a part of Africa, and she was boarding with a family because she was volunteering somewhere local.
Right.
And their house had a wall around it with a security guard on the outside. And then you would go into the house where you would be locked into the house. And then you would enter into the guest corridor at night where they would lock you in there. And then you're in a room where you would also get locked in.
Really?
Seriously. Because they knew that rich Westerners were staying in the house.
Oh, okay.
Most people had that anyway, the lock-in policy with the guard and the fence and all the rest of it. But they were even more so. That was wild. Yeah, it was terrible. She said it was honestly like being in prison.
I believe it. I would struggle with that in all seriousness. I mean, you know how restless I get at night.
Yeah, and there's no going out at night.
I tend to work, 7 p.m. to 2 a.m.
Yeah.
And the idea of being just forcibly kept inside at night would drive me mad. I know Bob said in one of his earlier stories that they tend to lock things up around 6 and kind of stay close to home.
Yeah.
And I just, again, it's just the way you live, but that would be weird for me.
Pretty nuts, eh?
Various occurrences. I admit that in retrospect, this feels like there's something that followed us around. My mom decided to move us back to Pines, Baguio City, in the highlands some months after the Great Luzon earthquake of July 16, 1990, of which some 2,412 people died in the city. My mom wanted us to spend some time in the relative quiet, away from the busy lowlands and our cozy mountain house. Some additional info to set up the atmosphere in our home: the fog rolls up the mountain every day of the year like clockwork from 3 p.m. till daybreak. It's pea soup fog, summer, monsoon season, doesn't matter. At the time, our nearest neighbor was about 1.5 blocks away. The subdivision isn't a gated community, but since the road leading down the hill into the little valley is barely 1.5 lanes wide and doesn't have another exit, it's pretty private. Our rule is to always be done with the outdoor stuff before sundown, for we don't have much external lighting in the yard. The stopover. This occurred during the time my dad was away working in California. We had been driving for a while and were two provinces away when we crossed a bridge over a river on the outskirts of a small village around lunchtime. We pulled over into a stopover spot with the intention of doing a driver swap. My grandpa was taking a break until his turn at the foot of the mountain, and my mom was taking over. First, lunch. We had a pretty good amount of travel comfort foods with us in a picnic basket, so we took our time with lunch, stretched our legs a bit, and then, realizing that the shops were all shuttered, we opted to climb back in the car in search of cold drinks. But the car wouldn't start. It was practically new at the time, a 1991 Daihatsu Charade hatchback, so it was weird it had stopped working. My grandfather walked to the village where he found a mechanic, who asked where we were parked. When my grandfather replied that we were at the stopover, the mechanic simply said, "Oh, I really appreciate your business, but there is no way I can get that car to start today. But I can pretty much guarantee you it will start like nothing happened tomorrow at sunrise." Puzzled, my grandpa asked him why, and the guy replied, "Some time ago, that stopover was a major revenue source for this village. And one day, as a bus was pulling back into the road, another bus coming around the bridge at full speed plowed into it, killing many people. He said that some of the people who died that day are unwilling to accept it and move on, so they try to drag other people with them. In Filipino, it's called dame, or to drag people into the same fate, unable to leave the area." My grandpa thanked the guy and offered to pay him for his time, which the mechanic politely declined, telling him either be ready to spend the night in the car, or leave it and find accommodations in the next town, as their village doesn't have any lodgings. My grandpa spoke with my mom away from us kids, and then he started on foot back the way we came from. Only later did I learn that he figured no bus would stop there, so he was going to walk back towards the previous town until he could flag one down and catch a ride home to get his car. He had to walk 10 kilometers back to the next town before finding a bus terminal, and by the time he got home, told my grandma what was going on, and got back to us, he was gone all night. In the meantime, darkness fell and we were all huddled up in the car. My mom, my baby sister, my three brothers and me. No AC, windows fully up. I remember hearing crickets, and then they went silent. After that, I heard faint thumping noises all over the car, like a group was trying to paw their way into the vehicle. My siblings were thankfully generally unobservant and eventually fell asleep where we sat, crammed into the back seat of this tiny car. As for me, having been volunteered to sit by the window on the shop side, I was tired of looking out at the darkness, so I'd taken to looking down at my shoes, pointedly ignoring my goosebumps and rising hackles. Thankfully, I wasn't alone. My mom kept me company and engaged me with a series of upbeat trivia questions, albeit said in hushed tones and half whispers. The car rocked a bit, but my mom quietly reassured barely teenager me that it was probably just a very good wind gust, and I bought it because I had to. It went on and on for what felt like an eternity, and just like that, the orange gold of the sunrise was breaking the horizon, and a familiar car pulled up alongside us with its engine running. My grandfather had come. My mom greeted him, and then absentmindedly cranked up our own car, and sure enough, it started. We drove down the road until the next town, stopping only long enough to transfer me and my middle brother to his car before we continued on nonstop till we got to our house. To this day, I don't like truck stops, even modern ones. This may not be that scary sounding, but imagine being budged up against the window, feeling every thump from outside, unable to see what it is. No, that's plenty scary, Bob.
Yeah,
that's...
no, I'm good.
Imagine how stressful it must have been for his grandfather to have to go all that way knowing that your loved ones are still back there.
Well, and the mom just trying to keep everybody calm.
That too, yeah.
Oh, just keep, my Lord.
Keep everyone sane and not asking too many questions.
The recovery months. In the months following the earthquake, multiple groups of people, including recovery personnel and my very own little sister and her friends, kept seeing bedraggled people in torn up clothes staggering all over the city streets. My sister was 10 and didn't realize those were dead people until I explained to her that what she saw climbing out of the rubble was not alive. After that many months, the chances of survival under various sites are practically non-existent. Yet people would see ashy figures with caked up blood and gashes stagger up from the rubble, only to vanish moments later. At times, the scent of nightflower, which smells like those flowers at funerals, would pervade the air. Dogs wouldn't stop howling till well into the Christmas season. The child. We've seen this entity collectively as a family a handful of times. As I've mentioned, our house is on the slope side of a hill. Its roof slightly above the street level. Our kitchen is small and only has one window located over the sink. The view outside is the driveway climbing to the right out to the gate. The street is eye level, with the adjacent lot's concrete driveway climbing up opposite the property. One moonlit night, it was my turn to do the dishes, and I happened to glance out the window to see, on the neighboring lot's driveway, a childlike figure sitting still, hands clasped around its impossibly long legs. I did a double take and subsequently backpedaled away from the sink and bumped into my brother, who was getting something to drink. I told him to look at the kid in the driveway, so he peered out the window, staggers backward the same way I did. My mom, thinking we were goofing off before bedtime, opened her bedroom door, which was adjacent to the kitchen, and asked what the commotion was about. We both shakily said there's a creepy child outside. To her credit, she walked over, took a quick look, and then told us not to look anymore or talk about it. She then told us to grab the folding mattress downstairs and our blankets so we can all sleep in her room. Four brothers and my little sister all crammed into my parents' room. The thing that bothered me so much about that kid is only really evident to me in retrospect. No vapor clouds formed over his head from breath. It was always cold at night in our area. He wasn't wearing any bulky or insulated clothes. He didn't move or disappear after an initial discovery. And despite the moonlight, he appeared dark, like the light didn't shine on him. He also cast no shadow on the driveway. We've seen this kid again from time to time. My dad asked around the neighborhood because his initial concern was that some kids are homeless and hungry, living in the empty lot on top of the hill. Money was tight in those first few years in the Highlands, but still he thought that maybe he could help them out a bit. There weren't any homeless kids, though, and he eventually installed blinds on the window as a stopgap. It's become a tradition of sorts in my family, not to wash the dinner dishes at that house. Just save it for morning.
Again, I just love the practical solutions to this stuff. Oh, there's a ghost outside the window when we wash the dishes at night? Well, we're putting up blinds. We're not doing the dishes.
There you go.
Your
there
move, you Casper.
You know, and that first story about the dead people coming out of the earthquake rubble, that reminds me of that story we did about after the big earthquake in Japan, when taxi drivers were reporting driving the dead back to villages that were no longer there and having the dead just disappear. Or that one woman, that line still haunts me where the taxi driver said, you know, she gets in and says, I want to go to this town. And the taxi driver said, you know, there's nothing there, right? And she looks back at him and says, am I a ghost? And then disappears. That's amazing.
Yeah, I've forgotten all about that.
It reminded me. It totally reminded me of that.
Them boots. The first time we heard this was when we moved into our brand new house. My dad built most of it, and my uncles designed it, so it's not an old house. We moved in as soon as the roof got put up, and most of the bottom floor was done, with the exception of the living room floor slash kids' bedroom ceiling, and our wraparound French door for the living room. Until those were done, we stayed in the master bedroom, which was the only habitable room at the time. It's located adjacent to the kitchen and is half the house on the main floor. Around our third night in our cozy new home, it was past midnight, and we were sleepily listening to my parents tell stories from their childhood. Unaccustomed to the cold, we were huddled up together half awake when we noticed the distinct, deliberate thump, thump, thump of leather boots coming from our living room, which had no floor yet, remember. My parents quietly got up, armed themselves, and ordered me to lock the door and not open it no matter what, unless they heard the safe word from my mom. They both stepped out, and after some minutes passed, she called to declare it clear. Despite an exhaustive search of the yard and the use of a spotlight to peer into the neighboring woods, there was nobody. But just as we were settling back in, the boot sound started all over again. This time my dad just reassured us that daylight was but an hour or two away, and we should just ignore it. I remember hearing my mom recite some whispered prayers as I faded into sleep. It happened a few more times over the years, including our ill-fated expedition to discover Santa one Christmas Eve. We sent my middle brother quietly up the spiral staircase to peer at the living room, fully expecting one or both parents to be sneaking presents up there as we'd heard steps. When he came back down, my brother shakily said our parents were not up there with presents. Let's just say we brothers fell asleep crammed into the bottom bunk of one of our two double-deck beds. The footsteps is such a common thing. I would go so far as to say that is the most common.
I have literally heard from two people in my acquaintance that they both have something that walks around their house just this week.
Really?
Yep.
Man alive. And Matt, how disappointing would it have been to be a kid thinking, oh, we're going to watch our parents putting out our gifts. This is going to be great. No, no, it's just Steve the Cheese Demon chowing down on the charcuterie.
Our last story for this episode is called Lolo. First, a quick backstory into the dynamics of Filipino families. Grandparents, Lolos and Lolas, in general, pertains and extends to grandparents' siblings. Same goes to aunties and uncles. Sometimes they are parents' cousins and not siblings. Lolo Pedro is my maternal grandmother's sister's husband, my mom's uncle. He is the typical stern, quiet patriarch, except around us kids. He's easygoing and soft-spoken, a soldier by profession. My mom was sent to live with them and her cousins while she attended high school and college, and he was delighted when my mom decided to live in the city of Pines because the military academy is located there, and every year he makes the trip to go and see the graduation ceremonies. On one such visit, he told my mom, "Always save me a spot this time of the year. I'll always visit you guys." We are lowlanders, and we don't speak the dialect, so we tend to miss our relatives. As fate would have it, he suddenly took ill and passed away one year. We attended his funeral, and afterward quietly traveled back home, where the summer quietly passed. I remember my youngest brother was about 3 at the time, and we were playing in our yard up and down the driveway, when we noticed my brother was standing at the gate, peering through the space between the small door and the larger gate. He called my mom over and said, "Mom, Lolo is here. He's outside the gate. We should let him in." Momentarily confused, my mom walked over, looked at the gate, and saw nothing. She then asked my brother who or which Lolo was he referring to, thinking it could be her father, even though we called our maternal grandpa Papa and distinctly not Lolo. Also, Papa, being a petrolhead, usually rolls up in one of his cars. Puzzled, she asked him once more, and then he said excitedly, "Lolo Pedro." I remember getting goosebumps, as I was old enough to know that we just buried the man a few months ago. My mom just reassured my brother that Lolo Pedro is only visiting us, as it was a week before the military graduation. And from then on in, it is not uncommon to hear the rocking chair gently squeaking at night, as he loves sitting by the fire before bedtime. My grandpa actually saves that seat for him during that time of the year, and I'm happy to report that Lolo Pedro chased Mr. Boot Thumps away, replaced by the familiar and comforting gentle rocking of the chair in the living room.
What a great way to end.
Mm-hmm. I like that one.
Thank you so much for sharing with us, Bob. Mm-hmm. And Rose, too.
Yeah.
You guys shared some really, really brilliant stuff with us, and you didn't have to, and we appreciate that you did.
We do. It
gives us some insight, not only into your lives, but into the lives of the people you grew up with, and the lives of people in the Philippines in general. So, thank you for sharing. And again, if you have a story you want to share, ghoststoryguys@gmail.com is a way to do it. There are other ways to reach us, which we will talk about in the C segment, but stories should go to ghoststoryguys@gmail.com. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be right back with patron shoutouts and listener mail.
Full-length record from Seattle's Ride at the Dojo is available now. You won about a week of battle. Find it on iTunes and streaming platforms everywhere. We're doing it right. We're keeping it tight. If it's your first night, then you have to fight. Get up. Ride at the Dojo. Black Box. The battle has only just begun.
Welcome back. Thanks as always to the rest of the team, Luke Greensmith, Anthony Germain, and Sarah Kent for their work on this and every episode. We couldn't do it without you. And first up, we have our patron shoutouts. Of course, we'd like to thank all our patrons. You guys are the river that drives the turbine of this show. You keep it all going. And for that, we are eternally grateful.
The wind beneath our wings. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought we were doing similes.
No, because if I have to come up with another one, it's going to go really badly. And then they'll stop giving us money. And that would be
good call. Good call.
All right. So again, we'd like to thank all our patrons, but we'd especially like to thank our most recent patrons. They are
Tony Casarano,
Katie Lafferty,
Raheem Chalmers,
Eric Abel,
Balkonski,
Elena Hancock,
Cassandra Diot,
Shad Malloy,
Michael Scully,
Robin Doolin,
Carl Harwood,
Carol Music,
and Brooke Wilkinson.
We also had a PayPal donation from Patricia Villa.
Aw, thanks, so, Patricia.
Yes, thank you so much. Thank you all so, so much. You guys, again, you make this possible. We appreciate the hell out of you. If you want to join the team, head on over to patreon.com/ghoststoryguys. That's patreon.com/ghoststoryguys. You get access to our exclusive live show, bonus episodes every month, like Cabin Fever, Chicken Talk, Luke Lore, all kinds of stuff, all available to you if you are a patron. And the higher up you go, the more rewards you get. Mm-hmm. You can find all that information at patreon.com/ghoststoryguys. And if you just want to give a one-time donation, you don't feel like becoming a monthly member, or you're not able to become a monthly member, you can do that at paypal.me/ghoststoryguys, or by sending it via PayPal to ghoststoryguys@gmail.com. Speaking of patrons, we have been promising this for a while, and now it is time, because there is a special tier, a tier at which we run out of ways to thank you. Mm-hmm. Really, we can keep sending you stuff, but
yeah,
you know, there's only so much stuff you can have. So if you are a patron at the $20 level or more, you are part of Ghost Force. That's right, every second episode we will thank the members of Ghost Force in this section, because you guys are friggin' nuts, and we love you for it.
We do.
The members of Ghost Force are
Arwin Simons,
Chet,
Christopher Coons,
Danny Hall,
Eric Abel,
Hannah Brown,
Jackie McFarland,
Jeanette Patterson,
Jennifer Garamendi,
Jennifer Petty,
Karen,
Kimberly Hansen,
Lumpy Rug,
Mark Simler,
Mary Rose WW,
Melanie,
Noel Jim,
and Rebecca Cloutier. You are the proud, you are the few, you are the eerily generous.
We love you.
Yes, that too.
I'm the emotional one.
It's yeah. I'm the we're both insecure. I don't know. It's hard to divide these things up. Next up, we have listener mail.
Our courteous and efficient staff is on call 24 hours a day to serve all your supernatural elimination needs.
We're ready to believe you.
As always, we'd like to thank everyone who reaches out with your comments, your questions, your gentle criticisms. We love it all. We love hearing from you. Knowing you're out there makes it worth us doing the show. And this time around, we'd like to thank
Rhonda,
Tracy,
James,
Jordan,
Patty,
Victoria,
Claire,
Paula,
Bree,
Lisa,
Kendra,
Kristen,
Dana,
Egla,
Christy,
Jessica,
Ramiro,
Diego,
Valerie,
Sarah,
David,
Kelly,
Wanda.
Thank you, everyone, for reaching out again with your comments, your questions, your gentle criticisms. And if you want to reach us at ghoststoryguys@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. That's probably the most direct way to do it. But you can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/ghoststoryguys, Twitter at twitter.com/ghoststoryguys. Sarah's the administrator there, so make sure to stop on by and say hi. We're also on Instagram at instagram.com/theghoststoryguys. And you can find us on Reddit. We do have a subreddit that Sarah moderates for us. We haven't really started using it very much yet, but it is out there at reddit.com/r/ghoststoryguyspodcast. And you can always reach out directly to us by voice via the ghost line.
There's something strange in your neighborhood. We're gonna call Ghost Line. Call 1-888-588-6920.
That's 1-888-588-6920. It's a number to call. You can leave a story. You can leave a comment for the show as one or a series of voicemails, whatever you'd like to do. That is a ghost line, and you can reach us there. And if you want to text us, you can reach us at 925-553-4789. Again, that's 925-553-4789. That's a U.S.-based number if you want to text us. Just so you know, there may be an international texting fee if you're texting us from outside the U.S. But you can send us text, you can send us pictures, whatever you like. And we won't respond. It's not set up for us to do that. But we'll always read everything you send. And if we do get a message, we'll read it here on the show. And we actually have three messages to read from the ghost line.
Ooh.
Since last episode. Yes. The first comes from Emily. She says, today I was listening to the new episode. Yay. I was just reaching the point where the father was experiencing the ghost woman coming out of the mirror and the power went out at my work. I'm in a windowless room, so suddenly I was in pitch blackness and I about crapped my pants. So thank you for the jump scare and mini heart attack. Our pleasure, I guess, Emily. I mean, hopefully you came out of that okay. That sounds terrifying. Next one, it says, hey, I'm the guy who sent those high school stories a couple weeks ago. I just listened to the mirror episodes. I don't have a personal experience. Hope I don't in the future. But I do remember this fun fact, either when I toured Myrtle's Plantation or Nottoway. When there was a death back then, they would cover the mirrors to prevent the deceased's soul from being trapped.
Oh, yes.
There is a story at Myrtle's about someone who was trapped in one of these mirrors. They claimed to see her face and or a handprint in the mirror. That is terrifying.
Yeah, that's not cool.
The mirrors episode really seemed to connect with a lot of people.
It did. Yeah, absolutely. A lot of people had experiences they wanted to share after that one.
And finally from Nicole, hi, I just wanted to say I'm a huge fan of your podcast. I don't have a story to share, thank goodness, honestly. I'm a huge fan of the paranormal, but would be scared shitless if something like that happened. Keep up the great work and thank you for everything. Well, thank you, Nicole.
Yeah.
Sending us that lovely message. And again, if you want to get in touch, send us a text at 925-553-4789 or leave us a voicemail at 1-888-588-6920. Because the world is still mostly on pause, there's not much in the way of news apart from my audiobook, A Strange Little Place, is available for sale on Audible, Amazon, and ACX.
Very cool.
Yes. And iTunes. And again, if you're grabbing that on Amazon or Audible, feel free to use your Audible credits. I do still get paid. And yeah, go for it. Keep an eye out for Ian's book, Victoria's Most Haunted. It should be hitting the market probably in about a month and a half, maybe a little bit longer, depending on how long it takes him to verify it.
Nice.
And as we mentioned at the top of the show, there will be other titles following that, but one thing at a time. If you want to pick up some Ghost Story Guys merch, head on over to our website at ghoststoryguys.com. There you'll find links to our TeePublic and Redbubble stores. If you do buy something at either of those places, make sure to forward us your receipt, and we'll send you a couple Ghost Story Guys logo stickers as a thank you. Don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes. We've had a few people do that recently. We love it.
Mm-hmm.
Can't tell you how much we appreciate it. Thank you so, so much. And again, we're slowly climbing the charts. You know, we're not anywhere impressive yet, but one day we will be.
We will be one day.
Our theme song, Radio, Into the Darkness We Go, is composed and performed by Peter of Pizzanta Music. You can find more from him at soundcloud.com/therealpizzantamusic. His new album, Lo-Fi Afternoon 4, was just released, so you'll be able to listen to that everywhere you stream music. That just dropped on June 14th. Our story's theme is The Future Belongs to Them Now by Hexagram. You can find more from them at hexagram.bandcamp.com. That's Hexagram with two X's, not three. Or everywhere you stream your music. And finally, we've had people ask us what bumper songs we're using in a given episode when we don't announce a musical guest. And because I choose that music generally in the editing process, I can't name it on the air, but I will make sure to put that information in the show notes. So if you like the music you hear and we haven't mentioned a specific musical guest, make sure to check the show notes at ghoststoryguys.com or even in your podcatcher, those should be there too. And that'll tell you what the song is. And from there, it's a pretty easy step to finding it. Mm-hmm. Most of the stuff is available on Spotify. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another show. And until then,
into the darkness we go.
I feel like that could be the tagline for my life. Don't worry, it gets worse. Now recording.
So from the top?
Yes, please. Think of it as practice. Oh, she was apparently a terrible person generally, so.
I'm not shocked by that at all. Actually, it kind of comes across. But my point is, I'm going to go all Lea Michele on you. I can't work this way.
And mute.
Sadly, Ian fell from my place. Okay, I will pass that on.
Please don't. Was that clever enough to be a pun? I don't know that it was.
I'll give it to you.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. Or call Brent's personal line, 1-900.
You know my work. I just want to be really, really tacky and tasteless. Is that too much to ask?
I did not have to resort to any petty violence.
We didn't have to send Rocco and the boys out.
No. Sorry, I was choking.
It's new for you. Bye-bye. And then again, I'm
so funny.
I'm sitting in the car. Wait a minute. Oh, then the third thing happened.
Oh, okay.
Had to deliver from McDonald's out to some suburban cul-de-sac up there. Parked the car, and I can see through the basement window. It's a bunch of probably, you know, got kids in their like early 20s having a party. I go to the French doors. I can see them in there. They're playing drinking games and shit. About four of them. So I knock on the window, point to the bag, wave, and I start walking away. And I heard from inside, quick, you know, Jenny, show him your tits. And I'm walking away. I'm like, did I hear that right?
Oh, my God.
And I thought, no, I'm just going to keep walking. No. And then I heard the door open and I heard, aw. And I thought, what the fuck is going on here tonight?
What a weird night.
It was such a weird, horny night for customers.
That is funny.
I was clueless the entire time.
Well, as long as nothing changed.
God forbid. Oh. Oh, boy. Boo.
So great.